brought to you by bedroombattlefield.com. This is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Welcome back once again to the podcast, Dan. How are you?
I'm good, man. Can't get rid of me. I just metaphorically knock on your door with a sad face every week with just big puppy dog eyes. I'm like, hey, you want to talk to me again? You want to have another conversation? I think you're too kind-hearted to tell me to go away, eh?
Yeah, and then even like I was saying to you the other week, like I am listening to your podcast as well. I'm listening to episodes from years ago, so I'm working my way through them. So I do hear a lot of your voice, it has to be said. But I'm enjoying that wee trip through. I listened to your very first episode. I thought, like you seem to be quite critical of the way you were in that episode, and I thought it was totally fine. So there you go.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, Kelly was an awesome guy. Like, Kelly was the guy who was in that first episode, and he's just a really, he was like the best painter in the group that we had in Baton Rouge. Like, and he was a really good guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
It is, again, looking back at your show from particularly that time, like if you're talking about 2018, 19, some of the folks, and I know some of the best conversations you had, obviously, were just with the quote unquote normal guy, but like you did interview a good few people who are very, very big names in the sort of YouTube space now, the commission painting space. So it must have just been like this just right period, because I imagine these guys now, they'll get loads of like requests for interviews and they're probably very selective.
It's always interesting that, isn't it? Like, you know, I always imagine like you've got this metaphorical Filofax, you know, those big Filofaxes, you know, the giant kind of things that businessmen in like the 80s would have, like with all the contacts and stuff like that. But I don't know. And I mean, you'll know as well. You just kind of ask, you just be nice. I think you'd be nice and you just try and be who you are. You kind of just say what it's about. And
Did you meet like most of those contacts through the Facebook group that you originally created around the show?
A variety of different methods, just emailing people, Facebooking people. It was just like doing the hard yards, you know, hitting the street and getting your face in other people's faces and just asking. And what I did do is you'll probably do the same, is that once you've got a few episodes in the bank, you just say, hey, how's it going? This is what it is. Have a quick listen to one of the shows and see if it's something you'd be interested in. I think that's the best way to do it, isn't it? You know what I mean? Instead of have a listen to a show, have a quick 5 minutes. And if it sounds like it's something that's good, then get in contact with me. And I just found that worked the most, to be honest, that worked the best. And I think that's the best advert as well, isn't it? You know what I mean? Trying to explain it or trying to say it's this or trying to say it that. So basically the shtick was it's a relaxed conversation. There's no right or wrong answers. I'm not looking to have any specific answers. I just want to have a chat about the hobby that we both seem to enjoy. Have a quick listen to, you know, not even dropping any names. I was like, just here's the list of shows that I've done so far. Just pick out one that you think is interesting. And I think I probably did get a lot of guests say yes, because they might have listened to a show of someone that they knew. Does that kind of make sense? So if it's like, you know, I think Andy Chambers maybe listened to the Rick Priestley one. So it's like, well, maybe not even listen to it, maybe just see his name. You know what I mean? It's like, well, if he's been on it, you're somewhat credible. Like, if he's convinced that guy to go on it, it's probably
yeah,
all right.
Yeah, I had a similar cascade like that, a cascade of opportunity, if you like, because I think I managed to get Gav Thorpe on the show. And once I'd got Gav, I could then, like, I think I asked him to intro me into Andy, and, you know, it went right, like okay. That, like reaching out to Thomas Piranin and saying like, oh, I've just finished recording with Alessio Cavatori. And once you start, like, you know, once you're just, names just falling out your pockets all over the floor.
Me and Alessio have just finished
just
being
out for a nice coffee. Yeah. So,
yeah.
And one thing.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
One thing as well that I noticed, just an observation like with your show, is because the folks I speak to, like almost all the sort of origin story is like, you know, White Dwarf, Hero Quest, Warhammer, whereas a lot of these early episodes I'm listening to with you, it's kind of Airfix and then like World War II stuff. Yeah. So there was definitely that. I do notice that happening a lot. So. Mm.
Yeah, man, it's just fun, isn't it, talking to people? I was talking to somebody else this week, and they were saying about, like, oh, do you think you'll do more shows and stuff? And I was like, I mean, we talked about it a while ago, and I think you should probably listen to our first conversation, even just think about that. Like, I'd had a different mindset, but I think talking to you and doing a couple of shows in the background, I kind of reignited a little bit of something. And not necessarily to speak to anyone, like, in the hobby or anything, but I think I said in the first time we spoke recently, people are interesting and people have got a decent story, and that will always remain interesting. But I'm trying to find people with different angles, with different ideas, different mindsets, different perspectives. So that's really important. That's what I'm trying to dig around in now and try and find somebody that's come to this hobby from a very different place. And even with those shows, I don't want it to be talking about my show too much, but I try and get a wide variety. Like, I forget what the guy's name is, but the guy from Mission Models. So he made his own kind of paint line. That was a pretty interesting one. John something. John Tamkin, maybe. That was a pretty interesting one. And then I spoke to like the creative director for the Total War Warhammer games. That was a pretty cool one. I enjoyed that one. You know, the Total War Warhammer, that's a video game, right? What to do with like Warhammer. So that was a pretty interesting one. And then there was another guy who was in the video game industry. And he made a few video games, but he was interested in the hobby too. Like, he made like an RPG, like a tabletop RPG, but like a video game version of that, but not a tabletop RPG video game. He made a video game of some people in a basement playing a tabletop RPG. which is a pretty interesting idea. Like, that's a pretty cool idea. I forget the name. I'll grab it for the end of the show and I'll tell you before we go. But yeah, it's just finding a wide variety of different people from a wide variety of different backgrounds, and that's what's interesting, you know. I don't know. How do you find getting guests? How do you find that? You find it like easy, simple? Is it hard?
It's been pretty easy to dip into the Discord community that's built around the podcast and find really cool, interesting people to speak to that way. Of which I've had a lot, you know, I've had a lot of good conversations that way. Where I've found it more difficult is if there's a particular person in the hobby that's not part of that community that I want to speak to. You know, it's quite, I don't have, as I'm always going on about, I don't have any social media, at least not any active accounts. So it's tricky now to get in touch with people, even if somebody does have a website. You know, they probably don't have an email on there, and if they've got a contact form, I'm always dubious as to whether these things actually get where they need to go. So I think trying to get an intro from somebody into somebody else, like I managed to do that where Joe McCulloch was kind enough to intro me into Mike Hutchinson. And, you know, I've had a few wee opportunities that way. If you're a nice enough person to folks and ask a wee favour, they generally don't mind, so...
Everyone knows each other as well. That's what you got to realize. Everyone knows each other. So if you go around that like Jimmy Big Nuts, you know, you're going to get doors slammed in your face pretty quick. Yeah, there are a few things put me off though, like about shows and things like that. Is like there's a few people I'm not going to name any and shame anybody, or not. It's not even shame, but I'm not going to name anybody. But like sometimes I'd get requests to like send through the question list, and then people would either rule out or rule in certain questions, and that's okay. I get that. But I tended to like those conversations a little bit less because it felt a little bit more forced. And then there was another group of people who were like, can you specifically ask me this question? And that kind of was like, because again, it's those organic, naturally occurring conversations that are ones I want to have the most. And the most interesting times I've ever had is when it's not the first question that's interesting, it's the question that arises from that answer, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
so you might ask them like what was your favorite game, and then they might say something, and then really listening to that, and then those questions that just come to you, and I find those were the best answers, or the most interesting for me anyway. Whereas like some, because people are very modest, and also people just take humdrum to them is amazing to me. So like I guess if you talk to like Einstein would just be talking about stuff that for him, it's like, oh, well, this is nothing big, this is nothing special. But to you, it's like, oh my gosh, what? Wow? Say that again. Where, you know, so it's like making people realize that what's normal to them is not necessarily normal to us, or it's not like a regular thing for us. That's always interesting. But yeah, man. So you what you want now? You won 100. You were on 100. What? How many got now? Like 105, 106?
Yeah, I'll be about that. Yeah, 105, 106. So into the treble digits. So
And are you enjoying it still?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Every conversation I've had has been really enjoyable. I'm glad I'm doing it, because it kind of, I suppose that ties into what we're speaking to today about, you know, building up a painting habit. Like, I think that documentation of the hobby helped get through difficult periods where I wasn't maybe too motivated, and I suppose that ties in, like I'm saying, to maybe when you get through and just get to the painting table on a regular basis, you do eventually arrive at the point where it is just a habit and you're no longer needing to find that motivation.
We've talked about this briefly, I think, before on Paint All the Minis, and I think we talked about seasonal hobby, right?
Mm-hmm.
You remember that? So just tell everybody that might not have listened to that show. I'm not sure if you talked about that on your show, but just as a recap anyway, like how did you define seasonal hobby, and is that something you still believe in or not?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point, because at the time that was very much my outlook, was that this hobby was going to be something for the autumn, the winter, and maybe the spring, as if we get any sort of summer in Scotland. But a
couple of days.
I didn't really adhere to that for the last year or maybe 2 years. Like I kept going through the summer.
Yeah.
I think probably because, well, certain things changed in my life. Obviously, having my daughter, summers before she was around, me and my wife would go out in the evening and have quite a long walk. So, you know, enjoying the late evenings. But by the time you got in, it was probably that wee bit late to crack on with some painting. But now, you know, my wee girl goes to bed, it's not like we're going to go out the house, you know. So that, I think that just kind of changed to the point where after 7 o'clock, I'm going to be around the house. So I got into the painting habit, I guess partly because of that at least. What about your sort of, I mean, is it the same? Because your job's very seasonal, isn't it? So does that tie in at all to your hobby time?
Well, there's a couple of things to talk about before we kind of get into that, if that's the case. I think I interpreted seasonal when we talked about it last time a little bit different to you. So you were talking about very literal, like the case of like autumn, spring, summer, and winter. And if you take winter, for example, like very explicitly, it's colder, it's darker, you don't go out as much, therefore you're more likely to be painting in the winter because you're inside more, which makes total sense. And then the opposite in the summer, you're going to be going out more, so you want to be going out more, you don't want to be inside as much, so therefore you paint less in the summer. So you kind of interpreted it in that fashion. I kind of interpreted it more of as a seasonal, as in sometimes I want to paint a lot and I will do. And other times I find that I just won't want to paint a lot and I'll paint significantly less, but that's not got anything to do with the actual seasons in a calendar year, if that kind of makes sense. So that's, I think it's important to note that there's ebbs and flows with everything, right? There's waxing and waning of everything. I think that if you're thinking about a painting hobby, I think it's unreasonable to suggest that you should be painting largely the same amount of time or the same amount of output if for a regular basis. I don't think it works like that. I don't think we are industrial in nature. Maybe if you're obviously a commissioned painter, that would be slightly different. But there's times where I just knob around, right? I'm sitting at the paint desk for 30 minutes, but I don't really do that much. I kind of look at my color wheel. It's on the wall. I just put that up recently. I've actually got a little color wheel on my wall now. I look at my color wheel, pick my nose, I drink my cup of tea, I have a look at stuff, and I don't really do so much. But then other days, I'm super productive. So I think there's kind of like, you know, literal seasonal stuff, but then there's also kind of like metaphorical seasonal stuff, if that kind of makes sense, right? And then another thing to note, I think, first and foremost, is we're thinking about how to form or how habits form and all that kind of stuff in terms of painting as a desirable thing. But there's some qualifying statements. Is one, don't force it. Like if you feel like you're forcing anything, don't do that. I mean, you should encourage yourself, and you should maybe aspire But if this idea of forcing oneself to do it, it's not worth it. Don't do it. And then also, everyone is different, and there's no one set way that is going to apply to everybody. You've got to find your own way. I think there's certain themes and certain ideas and certain characteristics to form a habit, but everyone is different fundamentally. So yeah, it's that, I think that's an important qualifying statement. Would you agree?
Yeah, I definitely. Thinking about your sort of, I mean, would you consider your painting a habit now? Because you've been doing it a long time, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. I would go even a step farther and I'd say it's becoming like a part of me. Does that kind of make sense? It's not gone away. So when was it? It would have been 2018. No, not 2018. That was when I moved here. 2014. When I started seriously doing it. So that's like, it's coming up 10 years now. So in 10 years, I know that's only like, you know, eye blinks to a lot of people that listen to this and they're in the hobby, you know, they've been in it like decades and decades, but I'm coming up to my first decade. It's never gone away. I've never stopped doing it. I've done lots and I've done not so much, but I've never stopped and I've never become disinterested. And so that's a positive. So I go a step further as a habit. It's like, it's something that's part of me now. And in terms of habits, you know, I mean, how are we defining habit? How would you define? Because you can't really say about creating a painting habit if we can't really define the parameters of what we mean by a habit. So what would you say a painting habit is?
Maybe it's so ingrained in your weekly routine. I'm not saying there won't be days where there's an exception, you know, if there's exceptional circumstances, it's Christmas Day or whatever, but, you know, there are days where it gets to a certain point and you just paint because that's what you do at that time on that day. I suppose that might be, you know, that habit routine. I don't know. There's obviously a differentiation there, but that's kind of what I'm thinking. It's not so much the Pavlov's dog style. You know, I see the paint pot, I start salivating. I'm not quite at that stage yet, but
see the paint pot, you start licking your paintbrush.
So
I think there's the words that spring to mind when I think of the word habit is like regularity, something that you do regularly. I always laugh. There's like, you know, the comedy show Red Dwarf. Like, you know that one, right? You know Red Dwarf?
Yeah.
You watch that? Yeah. So Rimmer manages to crack into the captain's safe and he reads his like personal profile and it says like that Rimmer regularly fails the engineering exam and he gets furious and he says, five times failing the engineering test five times is not regular. If I eat roast beef five times, you wouldn't say that I regularly eat roast beef. So yeah, but I think that a habit is that word regular or regularity. I think that's got to come into it. So I would say something that you do weekly, you know, I would say that is a habit. It's something that you do if it's something's habitual. You'd say something that happens on a weekly basis. I know you kind of have a habit. You kind of have a monthly habit. I mean, your gaming is kind of like a monthly habit, right?
Just before we get to that, I suppose one of the things that springs to mind on habits is whether they require motivation or not. I never feel that I need to be motivated to paint. There might be days where I've got lower energy than others, but I still do it because, you know, it's just what I do at that time of night. Riding on motivation versus I'm not having that internal debate with myself. I just do it.
I think there's certain conditions that you need to have in place in order to make something a habit. I think there's certain conditions that need to be placed in order for it to become a habit, if that makes sense. So, like, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm big into physical activity. I wouldn't call myself necessarily big into eating well, but those are two things that I try to do. I try to have positive habits with those things, both exercising, pardon me, and also eating well. And I think you've got to create certain environments or certain conditions in order for it to become habitual, because we're great at putting barriers in the way. Right. And we do that. Like, and it's like I do this quite a lot with parties. Like, I wouldn't necessarily define myself as an introverted person, but socializing takes a certain amount of my energy. And the best way to liken it is, I can't remember which video I watched or which book I read, but it was basically, this analogy was, I wake up in the morning with a certain amount of coins in my hand, and energy coins, and every social interaction as I go through my day requires me to take coins out of my hand and throw them away. And then at some point in the day, I don't know when that'll be, I just run out of coins. That might be very late in the day, it might be very early in the day. It depends on the weight and the significance of these social interactions, right? And I think when it comes to forming habits, I think it's very easy to put barriers in the way. And I do that quite often with parties and things. It's like, you know, just when I get to the party, I'm really like, this is terrible. In the same way that when I get to the gym, I very rarely have a terrible time. When I start reading my book, I very rarely don't enjoy reading the book, but it's the beginning. It's the beginning that is quite often the biggest challenge, if that kind of makes sense. So yeah, I think habit, something that is habitual, something that is a habit, it needs to have a certain type of regularity. I think that anything needs motivation. And I think that waxes and wanes, doesn't it? It's like the amount of motivation you need. I think I mentioned that before, is that sometimes I need no motivation to paint. And that's not always really quantifiable. Like I'm just coming off the back of like just the giant batch painting that I've been doing. I mentioned it quite a few times when we chatted now, and I've just come off the back of that, and I've started batch basing, and I'm doing significantly less now with batch basing than I was with batch painting. I don't really know why, and I've actually probably spent more time procrastinating on that batch basing than I have actually. I think if I wasn't procrastinating with it, I would have finished by now. But for some reason, I'm just not that into it. Even the fact that it's really easy, it's donkey work, I'm just not doing it. But I don't know why I'm less productive. I don't know why I'm not. But have you ever heard of a book? Have you ever heard of a book called Atomic Habits at all?
Yeah, I've heard of it. I don't think I've read it, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, so there's a book called Atomic Habits by a guy called James Clear. And that was a really good book that I read, because that's kind of being involved in education, that's something that a lot of people, especially young people that I bump into, kind of struggle with, because, you know, schoolwork is not particularly attractive, right? If you got a bunch of 15-year-olds and said you can either do this assignment or play video games with your friends, none of them, I would expect, would be choosing to do the assignment, right? The majority of them would be playing video games with a friend, right? Because I don't think we're designed to see all this stuff that's very far away, and to be able to reconcile the decisions that we make today that might potentially affect us in the future, if that kind of makes sense. We do, and I think we get better at that as we get more experienced in life. But this book really helped me as an individual, but also really helps the students that I work with. And this guy comes up with, like, there's a little test that you can do with yourself about getting into good habits. And there's four main categories that the guy talks about, this James Clear guy, he talks about in terms of forming a habit. But one of the key things of the book is that he talks about how, like, excellence or habits is not about one thing that you do on one day. It's about many little things that you do every day, and many little things that you do every day add up and compound to make big changes. So I think when it comes to forming a painting habit in order to paint regularly, it's not about sitting down on Sunday and painting for 8 hours. You know, that's unreasonable. It's not even necessarily about sitting down and painting for 2 hours every day. It's just maybe sitting at the desk every day. And it's maybe, you know, saying I'm going to sit at the desk every day, and I'm going to just make that the habit. Like, the habit is sitting at my desk and then seeing what happens, or sitting at my desk for 20 minutes and seeing what happens. And so, yeah, that's interesting. But then there's four main categories are make it obvious. So whatever habit you're trying to form, you need to make both the habit and maybe the desired outcome obvious to you. So you might have pictures of minis on your wall. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah.
So if you got, exactly right. Something that's going to keep it pertinent, keep it fresh, keep it at the front of your mind. So I'm very fortunate to have a hobby desk. So I'll keep the minis that I'm painting on the hobby desk. So that always makes sure that that painting is obvious to me. I must walk past my painting desk 7 to 10 times a day, even in a working day. So making what it is that I want to do, or making what it is that I want to achieve through the habit obvious, is important, I think. What do you think about that? How do you form the painting habit? Do you think that making it obvious is helpful? And do you do that?
Yeah, I definitely agree with all that. Having things visibly in front of you, I think, is important. You know, it keeps it front and center in your mind, doesn't it? Making things easy, like getting barriers out your way. Like, not everyone's fortunate enough to be able to keep a paint station, even a small paint station, set up all the time, but a lot of people can, and that's a huge help too, isn't it? Like, when you know, your brain could very easily talk you out of doing something that's not a habit, even if it's just a small setup. I've always heard this example. I don't know what the origins was, but it was, you know, somebody was wanting to do, say, like 10 press-ups a day. Nothing particularly impressive, but they just wanted to build that habit, and they were struggling with it. And it was somebody had said, like, just do one press-up a day. And once they were down there on the floor and had done one, they're like, well, I might as well do the other 9. So the issue wasn't doing the 10 press-ups. I did that.
It was just, this is when I was drinking a lot of tea. I drink a lot less tea now because of fasting and that. But when I was drinking, like, just tea, like a normal British person, I'd just do push-ups or sit-ups when the kettle was on. So, like, when you boil in a kettle, that's dead time, right? You're not really doing so much. So I was like, I'm just going to do some sit-ups until the kettle boils. And other people have, like, a pull-up bar, don't they? They have a pull-up bar in the door frame or something. And it's like, they put it in the door frame of the toilet. So it's like, when I go to the toilet on the way out, not on the way in, because you might have an accident, but on the way out of the toilet, you might just try and do one pull-up. And how many times do you go to the toilet? You go to the toilet in any one given day, like 3 or 4 times maybe. So if you do one pull-up every single time you come out of the bathroom, you know, you've got 4 pull-ups there. You do that every day, that's a habit. And then you might do 2 then. Is that going to make sense? So yeah, making the habit obvious so you don't forget about it. But you talk about a paint station. I don't necessarily think you need a paint station. You could just put the mini or a mini that you are painting somewhere that you walk past regularly. You know, that's pretty cool. So that's the first one. And then the second thing is to make the habit that you want to form attractive. Because if you're on about painting like an entire dwarf army for old school Warhammer, right? That's quite a daunting tactic, a daunting task. So, like, making stuff attractive, and that's the thing, is that, and this is why I mentioned at the start about how it's different to everybody. I'm just loving the batch paint at the moment. So at the moment, if someone shows me like a unit of 12 guys, I'm getting excited. That's attractive to me. Whereas other people might be turned off by that, and I might find that unattractive. So I think you've got to try and find a way to make the habit that you're trying to form attractive and desirable. And in this book, one of the chapters he talks about how to make things attractive is, I guess it's kind of like the glass half full, glass half empty kind of thing. But he talks about, instead of thinking like, I have to go to the gym every day, it's like reframing that. And I'm wary of this because I don't necessarily enjoy soft language. That's not something I particularly enjoy. But you talked about reframing the language that you use, instead of thinking, I have to go to the gym every day, into, I get to go to the gym every day. So instead of saying like, I have to paint every day, saying, I get to paint every day. Every day I get to paint, as like a desirable positive. And I'm not going to like celebrate the fact that you got fucking eyeballs or like hands, but it's like, I have the ability to paint. I get to develop my skill of painting today. And it's like over a positive self-talk, which again, I'm wary of because I'm always wary about soft language. But what do you think about that, about making? Do you whisper sweet nothings to yourself about painting when you're unsure about doing it? How do you make the hobby attractive? How do you make the painting habit attractive? Or do you not?
Yeah, I'm not one for the reframing. I get the context of it and all that, but it's just never worked for me, to be quite honest with you. But I get it, and if that helps somebody, then brilliant. But to me, a big part of a habit, I guess, is that reward aspect. And again, to like, this isn't painting specifically or painting at all, actually, but the last couple of weeks, just out of the blue, I decided I'm going to just start running again. Like, I've not ran for years and years. I've never ran seriously. And, you know, I play football, but that's not long distance running. So I just because of the dark winters and that, I thought I'm going to feel a bit better if I just started doing a couple of 5Ks a week. And, nice. You know, going out for a trail run in Scotland in the winter, it's not the sort of thing where you open the door and look outside and think, oh, yes. So there is that, like, you know, I'm going out here. This is not particularly pleasant. But just having done that first run and realising how good I felt at the end of it, you know, if we consider that the reward, and then it becomes then easier each day to step out the door because you're chasing that reward to an extent. And to bring it back to painting, you know, when we've put that last, you know, little band of green round a base, or we've put that varnish on, or we've got that army on the table finally, these are rewards that you can then, you know, your brain knows what you're working towards and it trusts that you can get there. And then I think it makes it easier to do the hard work to get you to that reward.
Yeah. Well, that's the last thing of the four that that's in this book. It talks about the making the habit satisfying. So making some part of it or all parts of it as satisfying as possible. But the thing is, I kind of like going for a jog in really bad weather. I really like it because it's like more of like an adventure. It's more of a struggle. And then when you go out and it's pissing down or proper cold, when you have that shower and then you sit down and you have a brew. And for some reason, it was always for me when I put warm, dry socks on. And then I have a brew. So I go for a jog, go for a 5 or 10K or something, come back, have a shower, and then put warm, new, dry socks on and have a cup of tea. That was like a really satisfying moment. I don't know. It's like a primal kind of, you know, manly kind of, I achieved some stuff. So I think you kind of get that warm, fuzzy feel like you did something today. You achieved, it was satisfying. Yeah. And it is satisfying, isn't it? And people derive satisfaction in different ways. And some people derive it from an intrinsic way. Some people get it in an intrinsic way. So like if you're playing a game and someone comments on the quality of painting, that's like an extrinsic reward, right? And people say, oh, yeah, that's great. I really enjoyed getting that comment and that feedback. And I kind of thought initially that that's like a bad thing, that like, oh, mate, you know, oh, come on. But that's fine. Like if you get extrinsic satisfaction from someone commenting on the quality of painting, that's fine. That's good. And no one's got a right to say that's not okay. I do personally derive a lot of intrinsic reward, stuff that comes from inside me. So just when I finish something and pack it away, I get a lot of satisfaction from that. How do you get satisfaction? Like what do you feel like gives you the satisfaction in painting? Is it something that comes intrinsically from just you and inside your head, or do you get, you know, extrinsic satisfaction?
No, I think there's a lot of times where I'll derive the satisfaction. Just the process of doing it, I find just really nice and peaceful. You know, getting stuff finished, getting it on the table, as much as you say, I never get to play. You know, and the rare times I get stuff on the table, that's a satisfaction too. One of the things that jumps to mind as well, and this is a thing that gets said a lot, and it's a thing I've said myself, is that like it's supposed to be a hobby, it's not supposed to be a slog. And I think there's a kind of danger in that saying, because no hobby that's worth anything is going to be 100% pleasurable all the time. If you think of any hobby, you know, if I was really into classic cars, you know, maybe there's a day I'm lying on a freezing cold stone floor underneath the car, trying to fix something. That's not pleasurable in the moment, but the big picture, you know, that's going to be immensely satisfying. Any type of hobby, like playing Sunday League football, great in principle, but when you're like me and you're running the line because you can't get a game, you know, there's no actual pleasure in that. But long term, maybe you get your last 5 minutes, you get the odd winning goal. There are times in this hobby where you do have to batter on. Maybe you've got a big batch paint that you're just not enjoying, whatever it is. I don't think you can always say this is supposed to be fun and put it away, because if you start doing that, it's going to cause, I suppose, a whole host of issues that might even end up stopping you from doing it.
I think that, like, going back to the seasonal thing that you mentioned, I think you're just naturally going to go through seasons in it. You're not ever going to feel exactly the same about it every day, but that's part of it too, you know. And I think I appreciate when I see like amazing paintwork, or I see any paintwork, not even amazing, but when I see any paintwork, I know what the other person's felt. And I appreciate the fact that I know that we have our natural ups and downs, and yet you did it and you completed it. So I've said this for many, many years now, like any miniature painted is a huge success, right? And in some ways, the worse it is, the better it is. Does that kind of make sense? Because the person that paints a bunch of crap miniatures, they're not going to sit there and think, oh, mate, these are like Golden Demon winners here. Right, but the fact that this proud to call them their own and are proud to bang them on the table, in some ways, the worse they are, the better it is to me, because it's like this guy is just rocking it. He's just banging them out there and saying, "This is what I did," and the fact that it occurred is amazing. Because when you think about it, it's pointless. It's pointless. We're not flipping houses to kind of earn a retirement fund. We're not investing in stocks and shares. We're not like, you know, working for a charity to feed homeless people, right? We're not like building a house that our grandkids are going to live in, right? With all due respect, me painting my little things in the big scheme of things is pointless. But that makes it all the better. Does that kind of make sense? So it's like you got these grown guys with these little plastic fellas, and it's pointless, but it's not pointless because it means something to me. Does that kind of make sense? But I'm talking about like externally, it's not saving the world, but it might be saving me. And that's awesome. I love that. But I love people with obscure hobbies anyway, and the more obscure, the better. But yeah, it's good, man. Like just appreciating the fact that anyone just did a thing is pretty awesome, right?
Yeah, and I get what you're saying, that the pointless thing. Like if we take like what has been achieved here for society, well, nothing. you could make arguments to the contrary, you know.
You could.
But if you're helping make yourself a better person, yeah, that is, you know, able to show up for things that are important, then yeah,
keeps me out of trouble, keeps me out of the pub, you know, keeps me out of all sorts of hijinks and merriment. But yeah, so yeah, satisfying. I think you've got to derive satisfaction out of it in some way, because if you're not deriving satisfaction out of it, there's no point. There's no point in doing anything.
I think we're both in agreement there, though, that satisfaction doesn't mean that it should always be completely enjoyable all the time. Like there will be times where you're going to have to grind through. So there's that differentiation there, isn't there?
Yeah. And sometimes you'll be highly satisfied with stuff. There's times where I've done things that I'm not really satisfied with at all. But then again, there's different shades of satisfaction. There's times where I've been satisfied that I'm finished, but not satisfied with the level of quality. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. There's other times where I've been really satisfied with the level of quality, but I've looked at it back and gone, yeah, I could have actually pushed it further there. I could have done more there. But that's the thing. I think you just got to, sometimes you got to accept something for what it is, and you got to be satisfied. Like this week, I haven't really painted so much, but I've sat at the painting table a couple of times. I'm painting Colonial Marines from Another Glorious Day in the Corps, the Gale Force 9 game, which is pretty awesome, by the way. It's a really good game if people want to check that out. But there's 12 Colonial Marines. Last week I did all the uniforms, like different tones of green. This week I was supposed to move on to like boots, straps and weapons. And I painted two guys' weapons. So I painted like two weapons, and I've painted five sets of boots and straps, just like basic leather. So like the productivity is low, but I'm satisfied that I sat at the paint table. I'm satisfied that I did something, but I'm not satisfied because I wanted to, by this time this week, I really wanted to have finished all the leather boots and all the leather straps and all of the black on all the weapons, right? But I am, but I'm not going to beat myself up about that. Yeah. I have done something, and I'm satisfied that I did something, and I've just got to wait and keep, it's a little bit like, you're in a boxing ring, I guess, and it's the last kind of 20 seconds before the round ends, and you're getting your ass handed to you, and you're like, just I'm not going to knock this guy out in this round, but if I don't get knocked down myself, then that's a win. I'm going to be satisfied with that. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that I've mentioned on the show quite a lot is that approach that I took from Ernest Hemingway, you know, in relation to writing, where he talked about as well. This is, you know, back when I was kind of having to motivate myself to start painting when I didn't really feel like it, before it became that habit, that routine. And, you know, Hemingway, he always said that you want to stop writing in the middle of a sentence, because the next day when you turn up to the writing desk, you know exactly where to start. Whereas if you finish a page or a chapter, you're coming to the blank page the next day, and it's a lot more difficult. And you could do this with your painting. Like, if, you know, you could finish up one night, you've got a nice easy, you know, you're doing boots or something, and it's pretty straightforward. You could just leave that to the next day, because when you turn up then, you're like, oh, well, nice easy start, get these boots done. And you know that once you've got the paints open and you're doing it, you'll kind of venture into the more tricky or adventurous stuff. But I think that could be a really useful tip for people as well, if they're just struggling to turn up and start. The Bedroom Battlefields Patreon now comes with bonus content, the first of which is a full battle report from White Dwarf issue 166. I read through this iconic showdown from 1993 between Blood Angels General Andy Chambers and Orc Warboss Jervis Johnson, as they showcase the new Warhammer 40,000 second edition. Find out more at patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. That's patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. And now, back to the show.
Yeah. And the final thing out of the four that are in this book, and I'm not saying it's like truth. It's just, this is a book that I found helpful, you know, the Atomic Habits book. But the third thing is making the habit easy. And one of the things that this guy talks about in the book, he talks about how, like, he wanted to do yoga every day. And so what he'd do the night before, so before he went to bed, he'd lay out his yoga mat. He'd lay out his, like, yoga shoes or something. I can't remember what it was exactly. His yoga shoe or his yoga clothes. His yoga clothes, his yoga mat, and his bottle of water. So then when he woke up in the morning, he saw his yoga clothes on the edge of his bed. And then when he got up and put those on straight away. So before he did anything else, like, he got out of his bed and put his yoga stuff on. And then he walked out of his bedroom and he saw his yoga mat and his water bottle there. And it was like that made the habit easy, because it was like, oh, it's already there. And it's a little bit like you're saying about, you know, once you're down on the floor and you do one push-up, you're probably going to do 10 because you're already there anyway. So yeah, making the habit easy. So those four things are: make it obvious, make it attractive, make it easy, and make it satisfying. But then equally, like Big Ann said about writing and different things, it's like it doesn't really matter, does it? It doesn't really matter as long as it works for you. As long as it works for you, it doesn't really matter what you do. But that the exploration and figuring out what the right buttons are to press, that's the journey in it. That's the struggle. That's a figuring out what works for you, because what works for me won't necessarily work for you, and what works for you won't work for somebody else. Or we might, it's a little bit like a Venn diagram, right? Where you've got, these are things that work for me. And if there's 10 things that work for me, two of those might link in with yours, but eight of them might be totally different. And then if you add multiple people on, I'd be interested to know what similar things bind us all. But I think satisfaction would probably bind us all, because if you're not getting any form of satisfaction out of it, I don't know why on earth you'd want to be doing it. Right? Like, yeah. That makes sense. So I think that's probably something that would bind us all together. Some form of satisfaction, whatever form that takes. And that might be likes, you know. Right, that the satisfaction you get out of painting might be likes. What do you think about that? You know, like, you bang it up on Facebook or whatever and you get 20 likes. How do you feel about that? Do you think that is healthy and positive? Do you think it's acceptable? Like, what would you think about someone getting that satisfaction through likes?
I'd caution against that being someone's sole motivation, because it's completely out of your control. Like, what if nobody ever likes your post again? That might happen. So I'd be skeptical of that being a primary motivation. By all means, do it, and treat anything you do get back in that front as a bonus. But aye, I don't know that those sales would carry you very far in the long term if that's all you did it for.
I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting though, isn't it? It's interesting though. And the kind of final bit I've got in terms of forming a habit is, I think you've got to define what is meant by a habit yourself, right? Because some people say, I paint every day. Yeah, okay, if that works for you, that's great. Paint every, you know, 5 hours every Sunday. Okay, that's fine. But don't let anybody else define the habit for you. I think I always try and strip everything back as far as possible and zoom out as far as possible and say, like, what's the loosest definition that we can agree on? And I think a habit has an amount of regularity. And I'd be cautious about going any further than that. Because, you know, if you do something like, you know, Christmas happens every year. So there's certain habits that I have, but those habits only occur at Christmas. But I'd say they're still habits. Is that going to make sense, right? Like, is eating birthday cake on your birthday, is that a habit? I don't know. You know what I mean?
Ritual.
So it's like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, so I think first and foremost, you've got to, don't necessarily get bogged down with an exact quotation of what a habit is. I think you've got to form your own identity and you've got to form your own definition of what a habit means to you. But I think definitely something that happens with regularity, I think that's a habit. That's a habit for sure. And then, you know, find your own way. And that's the fun of it, isn't it? Finding out what motivates you, finding out what doesn't motivate you. Like, I got some of those too thin coats recently. And I've got a habit. I love mixing my paints. That's a habit I have. I mix paints. Sometimes I sit on my bench, right? And I've got my little, you can probably, I see if you can hear it. You hear my little thing going? You hear it going?
Yeah.
I've got like this nail polish mixer. I really enjoy mixing my paints. I'll mix them and then I'll, you know, make sure that they're all the right consistency. And sometimes I won't even pour any of the paint out. I just put it away. But that's a habit. That's a habit. I like to keep my paints in good order. But yeah, man, that's good. And so, yeah, like that book, Atomic Habits, is really good. And I'd be interested to know if any people listening have got, I'm really, really, really wary about like self-help books. I'm really wary about that sort of stuff because I'm very wary of handing my power I'm very wary of anyone handing their power to other people. Does that kind of make sense? You know, I don't like that. Like, we all have our own power to do what is right for us. And I think when we abdicate from that agency, I don't think we act very well as human beings. So I'm always wary of self-help books. And I wouldn't necessarily class Atomic Habits as a self-help book. It's interesting to know about, you know, what potential things are available to be more effective and more efficient in your life. But yeah, that Atomic Habits is a pretty good one. I'd be interested to know if anyone's got any other ones that they've kind of read that might be helpful into kind of forming habits. But there's another thing that I wanted to talk about, and that is a growth mindset. Have you ever heard of a growth mindset? Do you know what a growth mindset is?
I could have a stab at a definition, but I guess you'll have a better one.
No,
so on you go.
Go on, Ned. No, go on. What do you say? What would you say? So there's people that argue that there's two main types of mindset, and that is a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. So a fixed mindset is something that's quite negative, and a growth mindset is something that's quite positive. So go ahead, man. You'll get it. Like what would you say is some key aspects of having a growth mindset?
I suppose a very basic definition would be the thought that I don't know everything and there's lots more that I could learn and improve, whereas mm-hmm. versus, you know, I know as much as there is to know, or there's no point in learning any more about this. Would that be on the right lines?
Yeah, definitely, mate. So there's some certain characteristics of a fixed mindset. And what I find with a fixed mindset is I would paint a lot less, and I would enjoy the habit a lot less if I had certain characteristics of a fixed mindset. So here's some of the fixed mindset characteristics. Avoid challenges. Refuse to receive criticism or feedback. Focus on proving yourself. Feel threatened by others' success. Can't accept failures or mistakes. Shy away from unfamiliar things. And believe that talent is static. So I found that when I'm not always growth mindset. I'm not always fixed mindset. I think I'm constantly in a state of flux between them. And I don't think it's possible to be Mr. Growth Mindset every single day of the week, right? But I found that I enjoyed painting a lot less when I was exhibiting characteristics of a fixed mindset. So if you take just the last one I mentioned there about believing that talent is static. So saying things like, I'm just not very good at painting, right? That is a fixed mindset. And that's something that held me back from my painting. And I believe that it might have held other people back in their painting. Because if you believe that you're not very good at painting, I don't believe that to be true. I believe the growth mindset side of that is believe that talent is ever improving. So it's like this belief that if I paint more, I'll get better. Am I ever going to be the world's best painter? No, probably not. But that's not the point. Do I believe that talent can be improved? That's more of a growth mindset. So sometimes we put barriers in front of ourselves and we don't get into the habit of painting because we believe that we're just not very good at it, right? And then also feeling threatened by others' success. You know, that's another fixed mindset thing which might prevent you from the habit of painting. Like you might be part of a gaming club. You might be part of, some social media where people share their paint work. And if you feel threatened by other people's painting quality or you feel threatened by stuff, that again, that's a fixed mindset thing. So instead of being threatened by the other person's success, maybe be inspired by that. So you look at someone else's models and you think, wow, those are amazing. I'd like to get close. I'd like to get my models closer to that. So I think that's been a really important thing for me. Not just in painting, in just in life, like trying to live my life with more of a growth mindset, you know, embracing constructive feedback, focusing on the process, not on the end result. Be inspired by other success that I just mentioned. Learn and grow from failures. Always step out of your comfort zone, like trying new stuff, like trying the object source lighting, trying the non-metallic metals, you know, trying to do the base layer, the wash, the highlight and those kind of different layer things, you know. So yeah, so you probably know growth mindset without knowing growth mindset, right? You kind of knew this thing exists without me defining it there, right?
Yeah, I'm good enough already. I don't need any of that nonsense.
But does it resonate with you? Does it kind of make sense? You kind of see it as a desirable thing to maybe have a growth mindset?
Yeah, definitely. That's a no-brainer, isn't it? Like the characteristics of the fixed almost all just sound very negative. So yeah.
But that's the thing. So that was a lady called Carol Dweck. She kind of came up with this idea, this theory of the growth mindset and neuroplasticity. Are you aware of neuroplasticity? You heard of this?
Yeah,
this
I've before? Heard a wee bit about that before. Yeah, yeah.
That's basically talks about how inherently we are designed to learn. And the more we learn and the more open-minded we are and the more of a growth mindset we are, the better our neuroplasticity. Our brain is designed to create new connections and new pathways. That's designed to do. And if your brain is like a muscle, and the more you use it, the more pathways you create. And the more times you use those pathways are strengthened. And the more strengthened those pathways are, the easier it is to create other ones and all that kind of stuff. So hey, check us out. We're doing
that. I always knew
this
would become a neuroscience podcast. So
mate,
we need to get some supplements to shell.
The problem is that if anyone listens to this actually knows about this stuff, we're snookered. Well, I am anyway, because I'll be like, no, that's inaccurate. No, that's misapplied. But yeah, this stuff that I've just kind of picked up just through osmosis, through kind of what I do in general as my job, and kind of, you know, pick out things that are relevant or seem appropriate and all that kind of stuff, man. But yeah, there you go. So yeah, forming a painting habit. You know, it's got to be satisfying and hopefully fun.
But not always fun, no. And not always easy. In fact, exactly. Not often easy, I would say.
But I think, you know, you call it peaks and troughs, right? Peaks and troughs. So like highs and lows. You're going to have highs, you're going to have lows. But it's about, like I said, when you see somebody with like a full painted army, you know that they've not been like basking on having a great fucking time, like the whole process. You know that they've had to, you know, grind it out, right? And yeah. The respect that you can give, that doesn't even necessarily need to be voiced, but the respect that you can give because you know that they've gone through that process. Just a look in the eye can convey that, right? It's like you both know that you've gone through it. There's been highs, there's been lows, there's been middle ground. It's been a long time. You've been maybe been sick when you've been painting it. You know, you maybe even fine when you've been painting it, but you got through it and you completed it. I've got a big respect for that.
Thanks very much for listening to this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. If you enjoy the show, then please do share it with someone else you think might enjoy it too. And be sure to check out our Discord community of like-minded hobbyists, which you could find at bedroombattlefields.com/Discord. It'd be great to see you in there.